Yeah, we're good to come up. So, this is the venue. I think it's really nice. I think you're going to have a good show. Great stage, really good lighting, killer sound.
Yeah, this is about the most beautiful venue for a live podcast I ever saw.
Thank you, yeah. Yeah, I put a lot of work into it, but yeah, it's good to go. So what is the actual show going to be?
Well, tonight? I'm taking some time to finally sit down and once and for all compose the ultimate epic tweet storm. It will connect Putin to Trump and his entire administration of vile thieves, as well as the assassination of Andrew Breitbart and the cancellation of Firefly.
Matt, I'm hungry.
Should have eaten before we got to the show.
Okay, well, that sounds great. Epic tweet storm, that's excellent. Well, couple things, just housekeeping. One first thing is there's absolutely no alcohol allowed on stage during the show. So I'm sure you're fine.
That's fine. Okay. That's totally
you're
fine.
You're not a recovering alcoholic.
No,
okay,
not
good.
At all.
Because that would be a problem. But
totally fine.
Okay, good. Really, the only other thing is, I don't know. This stage has been known to give people second thoughts about the venue.
Well, that's intriguing. What do you mean?
I heard that it was actually built on an ancient Irish American burial ground.
No, that's not that at all. People actually like that about it. But it's, no, I don't suppose they told you in Denver about some of the tragedies that have happened up here?
No, I think I would have remembered that.
I don't want to sound melodramatic, but this place does have a certain history of psychological crushing terror behind it. There have been several drunk TED Talks. The IRL Club, they did that here. A live taping of Citizen Radio once was one of the last ones. Just last month, the event was Duck Dynasty and Girls Splintered America, a conversation with Dr. Vox.
Oh my God.
So, I know.
Oh my God.
As you can imagine, everyone involved with those projects, they went insane on stage and ended up killing each other live in front of the audience.
Understandable.
In fact, the hosts of Pod Save America, each of them just sort of swallowed two barrels of a shotgun right after they put an axe through the head of Miranda's understudy during an interview.
There's a silver lining to every cloud, yeah. Willie.
Well, you know.
Shut up!
Anyway, you can see, you know, why that would give people second thoughts. So,
well, you can rest assured that's not going to happen to us.
Okay, great. You're all here, so is there everyone...
God damn it.
Hey, everybody. Sorry I'm a little late. I had some diarrhea and I overslept, but I'm here. I got my entire costume. I got a joke for you, partner. I'm going to tear you a new asshole.
God damn it.
What?
Shit, I'm sorry to do this. I'm sorry to break the fourth wall in the middle of our little stage production here in front of an audience, but Felix's theme for the show was The Shining. Stanley Kubrick's The Shining, and you're here as Stanley Kubrick's Full Metal Jacket.
Look, I thought we could do any Kubrick, first of all, and second of all, you guys said that my Scatman Crothers costume was a little too accurate.
Yeah. So
is that you, John Wayne?
You sort that out. Have a great show. I'm going to be working the sound and everything, so I'll leave you to it.
Okay. Let's start the show. Brendan James, everybody.
Big hand.
Hello, Littlefield. We are Chapo Trap House. This is The Shining. Like I said, you guys know us. I am Will Meniker. Joining me, as always, is...
Amber Lee Frost.
Matt Crispin.
Felix Biederman.
Virgil Texas.
We are Chapo Trap House, and for this evening's live show, I would just like to thank Littlefield for hosting us, and also the Center for Reproductive Rights. All of the proceeds from tonight's ticket sales will be going to support them and that great organization. In addition to the Center for Reproductive Rights, I would also like to thank the good folks over at Cantor Fitzgerald for paying each of us $4 million each to be on stage here with you for this evening for probably 10 to 15 minutes. But, you know, folks, I mean, I'm not working for free here. I mean, this is not, we're not a charity.
If you have a problem with it, we are private citizens now.
So this is our live show, and as you may have noticed, it's The Shining. And so people ask, why The Shining? Why have we chosen The Shining for this evening's show? And I think it's because, like Stanley Kubrick, we are also creative geniuses whose work has been subject to misinterpretation and various conspiracy theories. So now, here for the first time, I will confess to you that if you pay extra close attention to every single detail and every sort of metatextual reference that we've woven over our now 100-plus podcast episodes, you can find, if you are smart and look obsessively enough, our coded confession that indeed we helped NASA fake the globe Earth photographs.
We also gaslit the diaper astronaut baby.
Well, we also like to harass women into madness, so.
The Shining, again, very appropriate. Also, The Shining is a movie that features several very important scenes in bathrooms with bathroom sickos. And again, we just want to patrol those bathrooms, make sure everything is okay, and no sickos or ghouls are involved in any of them, whether they be red or green or just the one in the Overlook Hotel's residential side of the wing.
My life also has a lot of important scenes that take place in bathrooms.
It's true, folks.
He has diarrhea, folks.
You could still be waiting here. It was that close. Yeah.
But in addition to all those other things and the many ways that, you know, me personally am like Stanley Kubrick, at its heart, The Shining is a movie about a writer who is driven insane and breaks out in rage and homicidal madness. I feel like we do a lot of the same on the show in that we highlight the works of writers who have gone insane and then feel homicidal madness and rage as we're reading them. So tonight we hope we will do the same and drive us all to murder, because we are highlighting for you the stories of two writers in particular, two special reading series, one from a liberal, the other from a conservative. We are a equal opportunity podcast.
We don't care who we offend.
We are going to highlight for you two tales of writers gone mad who, in the bat-infested attics of their mind, have completely lost the plot and are now, like I said, always at the Overlook Hotel, or at least since the 2016 election. So, start things off, you know, it's been a news week, as all weeks are, and there's just a couple items that have been burning up, I think, sort of the liberal side of things. There have been sort of two controversies that I want to reference, and the first of one, I already kind of made a joke about. It's Obama's speaking fees at the Wall Street firm Cantor Fitzgerald, just cleaned up a cool $400,000 to give some inspiration.
How dare you! He served you with honor for 8 years, and you want him to talk for free? You know what that's called? You know what it's called. You make me sick.
I mean, yeah, like, a lot of people, they've been saying, what do you want him to give a speech to a Wall Street firm for free? And I think the answer to that is no, I just don't want him to give the speech at all, but...
You are forgetting the law signed into... the bill signed into law by President Reagan requiring all presidents to give hand jobs to Wall Street executives after they leave the office.
I mean, he already gets like the $200,000 a year pension, and He got like a joint book deal with Michelle for like $60 million. He's actually writing a highly controversial book, Meals from My Father. But I don't know how much money he needs. It's like he's trying to run his own drone program independently now.
Well, he still has to use that free government phone.
You know, I will say to people mad about the Cantor Fitzgerald speaking fees that it looks unseemly, at least in regards, in light of his $65 million book deal that he signed as soon as leaving office. That would be ignorant because he's not going to get that $65 million all at once. In the publishing industry, there's a little thing called payouts, and he's going to have to take it a little bit, like $20 million at a time, okay?
They got him.
So he's got to feed his family, okay? So, again, people shouldn't be so mad at Obama for doing this, but there's another figure that we should be even less mad at. And the people have been... Her name's been coming up, and I wish people would stop. I am, of course, referring to Chelsea Clinton.
Love that girl.
The audience, I can tell, is they're filled with Chelsea fans. And
well, I mean, who isn't, honestly?
A lot of Chelsea heads
here. I mean, what's not to love?
Those pancakes?
Yeah, the spinach pancakes.
Chelsea.
Delicious looking.
Chelsea told me, you know, growing up, that it was okay to have a dad who flew on the Lolita Express.
That is exactly what I'm talking about, and this is exactly the kind of back talk that Chelsea has been getting all week long, because, like, okay, she's on the cover of Variety. She seems to be sort of like they are spending all of the money that's left over from the failed presidential campaign on a PR push to put her on every magazine and TV show to talk about how she is, you know, just a private citizen,
she's
a mom.
Concerned.
Yeah, and concerned about the country, which I'm sure you don't read anything more into that. However, people have been reading more into that, and it's made some people mad.
Dude bros.
Yeah.
This brings us to our first selection of the evening. I'm speaking, of course, comes to us courtesy of Marissa Cabas.
We got some Cabas heads in the audience. I heard them.
Yeah.
Raise the roof.
This was published on a little journal of thought and opinion I call Medium.com.
I used to write for Medium until WordPress gave me a better offer.
The title of this piece, the first in the special Overlook Hotel Reading Series edition, is entitled, Chelsea Clinton Doesn't Owe You Shit.
Hell yeah.
A swear in the title?
Well, no. Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
Thank goodness.
They put the asterisk where the I is for delicate ears.
I was getting the vapors.
This is professional. I mean, this is like the New York Times.
She's a lady.
Yeah. The subhead is, the former first daughter is being hounded by media for a definitive answer about potentially running or not running for office. But why should a 37-year-old have to dignify them? She's only 37 years old.
She's a baby.
Okay, the first line of this piece is transcendent. Chelsea Clinton's only crime was being born.
That's right.
She's like a Johnny Cash song.
A bad sign has been over her since the day she's been born.
It's all for you, Chelsea.
Marissa writes, the famous daughter of parents Bill and Hillary, in case you forgot.
Oh, I was wondering. I thought it was George Clinton's daughter.
Was thrust into the public eye as a toddler. Bill became governor of Arkansas before Chelsea even turned 3. And by the time she was 12, her dad was president of the United States.
Okay, I'm sorry. I have to interject already because being the governor of Arkansas does not thrust you into the public eye.
I'm sorry, but
it's like the paparazzi are everywhere.
Yeah, from the Little Rock Herald Tribune and the Little Rock Journal and Little Rock Clarion Picayune.
Even better, she went through puberty and angsty teenage years as a resident of 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue and was called the White House dog by Rush Limbaugh and was forced to endure the very public humiliation of her father's sexual indiscretions as a freshman in college. Okay, now, to leave things off, both of those things, I think, should be said, aren't Chelsea's fault, and she shouldn't be... Like, Rush Limbaugh, that was a terrible thing to say about a kid, and obviously she shouldn't be held to account for her dad's, you know, missteps personally in the White House. Again, she was a teen and now a freshman in college, so, like, this is, I would say, there's not totally wrong so far.
Yeah, don't call little girls ugly. I think we're all on the same page there.
Yes, Chelsea was born into a wealthy and powerful white family, but to say it's been easy for the Clintons' only child is to display an extreme lack of empathy.
Or, like, perspective of any kind.
Despite growing up before the country's judging gaze, by all accounts, Chelsea has emerged as a success in business, family,
no, wrong.
Being a general fine
no,
person.
No.
What are you talking no. about, Matt? She sits on the board of the Global Solutions Initiative, sits on the board for, you know, fucking...
Little Titans PTA mom yeah. or whatever the fuck.
Yeah. Yeah.
Look, if she just capped this and say she's emerged as a success in family and by all accounts...
She had a child.
...is a normal person.
It was a normal human baby. It doesn't appear to have telepathy that will end human existence.
Yeah.
I don't know that she's dropped it. Probably not. I'm going to give her that one.
The success in family thing, like, how does this writer describe miscarriages?
God damn. I'm sorry you fucked up so bad.
Yeah.
It's really embarrassing for all of us.
But
it's a big oopsie.
As far as success in business,
no.
That's a bridge too far. Let's be honest here. Her husband isn't even successful in business despite being a...
This fucking dipshit tried to get insider information to help him trade like Greek debt during the crisis, and he fucking ate shit and lost billions of dollars.
His hedge fund, which is just him, went long on the Greek debt.
Brilliant. Well, his mother-in-law was Secretary of State. Titan of industry.
Yeah, what happened? Did Hillary faint while, like, passing along information?
Marissa continues. It's frankly bizarre, on the heels of her mother's crushing defeat in the 2016 presidential election...
And I like that part.
She won the popular vote! She is president! And the heavy misogyny that pervaded the campaign season, to watch left-leaning journalists come for Chelsea and her maybe, possibly at some point, but who knows, political ambitions.
No, because this is like fucking Jason movie, where the monster is dead, but you're like, and you watch the idiots run away, and you're like, no, don't run away, chop his fucking head off.
Yeah, like
we've seen this before. It rises
dead,
up behind
up.
You. It's like when Michael Myers sits up at the end of Halloween. That's the fucking Clintons.
Monday evening, the Will Chelsea Run Watch was sparked anew by a tweet from political journalist Matt Yglesias. Shout out, Matt.
Friend of the show.
Friend of the show, Matt Yglesias.
Huge turd. By the way, anyone online who's like, oh, Matt, go on Chapo, that's not funny. Fuck you. You will never be on Chapo.
So, in responding to Matt, Chelsea tweeted, I'm not running for anything. I feel great as a private citizen.
I ain't feeling no ways tired.
More Jelen skips a generation.
But, for the brigade of white male political journalists, Chelsea's answer was unsatisfactory. They demanded a firm answer and perhaps a bit of time travel on her part on whether she would ever launch a political career, making her respond again that no, she wasn't running for damn office. Nevertheless, they persisted.
Oh, nice. I see what he did there.
Yo, DJ, run that shit back.
But the part that made me truly lose it... In case up until now I was...
looking too sane.
Yeah. Was when one journalist, Byron Tao, went after the, quote, weird verb tenses she used to express that. At this moment, She does not have plans to run for office. She's strategically leaving it open-ended, and the men are not having it. Ladies, can you relate to that when your man...
You know that feel?
...is not up on your verb tenses?
The funny thing is like, that's what shithead horse-raised journalists do.
Yeah.
They, like, read tea leaves forever because they don't give a shit about any policy or governance. They just want to know who's going to win. And so they spend their entire lives poring over every statement by every politician or would-be politician to find out what they're going to say. And because Chelsea has been on every goddamn magazine cover on Earth, they're like, well, maybe she's one, too.
No, just I think they're ready. Doing a service. I want to know if she's coming for us. I want to know.
No, in this one case, yeah, I think like they're doing good work by letting
exactly.
us know.
This is like, you know, this is their one real purpose. And, and the response is, like, don't question your betters, I guess.
It's like, let us know. Give us time to, like, dig a moat. Fill it with gasoline.
Yeah.
Like, put out the stakes and do, like the fucking the paint cans from Home Alone in the house.
Yeah, I mean, they're doing every single thing that a group of people like the Clintons do when they're trying to trot someone out there. Like, Chelsea's been in 50 articles that are like, the courage of women who post. And... It's like, well, yeah, that isn't conspicuous at all that you're telling me she's incredibly talented.
You're
like,
pandering
now.
To the only Clinton-based left liberal female
These
bloggers.
Fucking weirdos who treat the Clintons like they're the Merovingians. Like they've got Christ's blood in them. It's like, what? That's why you got two shitty triangulated terms and then the biggest shit-eating in the history of presidential politics. And you're going to build a cult around that? That just, like, aim a little higher, for Christ's sake. I know we're, like, at the end stage of this, like, disastrous experiment called America, and, you know, everything's falling apart, but my God, you know, dream a little bigger in your last moments on this fucking earth.
Yeah, it's like you're about to be executed, and you're like, I just really want a Dairy Queen hot dog.
Actually,
just really love how they do them.
This is the incident at Owl Creek Bridge for presidential runs. Right before that rope goes taut, I just see the Chelsea Clinton presidency. I just want to highlight two. These are two responses to all the journos who won't leave Chelsea alone. The first comes courtesy of Erica Heidewald, who writes, "Dear men obsessed with Chelsea Clinton, go to therapy, you fucking creeps." The next one comes courtesy of Adam Friedland's taxi driver.
Oops.
Adam.
Oops.
Male journalist's creepy obsession with Chelsea Clinton confirms to me that they've learned absolutely fucking nothing from 2016. Yeah, they've learned nothing. Yeah. But here is the line that is actually highlighted in the Medium piece because people shared it and loved it so much. "The fact is, powerful women are deemed worthy targets of badgering and criticism.
They are.
No matter what they say or do." And I'd just like to edit that and just say, powerful people are worthy targets of badgering, humiliation, and bullying.
That's, right? That's the whole thing. You antagonize the powerful.
I want to go back in time and write this same article, but it's like, journalists won't leave Mark Foley alone. They're just jealous of him and all the friends he made.
Local bards won't stop singing about all of the mysterious disappearances around Countess Bathory's castle, and I am sick of hearing about it.
Yeah.
If Chelsea is noncommittal about her political plans, she's branded as shady or omitting facts. If Chelsea were to say, yes, I plan to run for office someday, she'd be hounded every moment of her life. No, she wouldn't. It'd be over. Then we'd know, right?
We'd all be like, okay, batten the fucking hatches, people. They're coming back.
I would know what I'm doing in 2020. I'd be working for Barron Trump's campaign.
Could it be possible that Chelsea is actually happy and proud of what she's accomplished?
Oh, that's I think she's pretty impossible. Proud of herself.
She's incredibly proud of herself.
Yeah.
The men are...
The fact that she wasn't ashamed to tweet those fucking pancakes means that she suffers from an excess of confidence.
Yeah, she has never been told no.
It's like that t-shirt, the like, you know, Lord, give me the whatever
the
self-esteem
to, yeah.
of a mediocre white man. But really, if you're wearing that t-shirt, you have extremely high self-esteem.
So the men are unconvinced by this. And this is what Chelsea's really doing. You know, all this speculation, she's on the cover of Vanity Fair. No, she's on the cover of Variety and like 10 other magazines entitled Women in Power. Here's what she's doing. She's promoting her new book, She Persisted.
Politicians never do that.
Yeah. She's promoting her new book.
A PR campaign based around a book launch meant to put you into the...
Titled She Persisted?
Titled people, meant to put you into the public conversation. So that's absurd.
She Persisted is a children's book about 13 inspirational women in U.S. history. This is the accomplishments that Marissa was talking about.
Hey, she personally put her signature on every page once she saw it from the ghostwriters, okay?
Yes, this monster person wants to help kids. Like her two little ones learn at an early age about the struggles women still face in this country.
For only $25.95 hardcover.
I 100% believe she wants to help her two little kids.
Yeah, like it's like there's no other way for me to inspire them. I have to mass publish a fucking book.
You have to make a shit ton of money or they won't be inspired.
Right. We don't know. Again, people are judging the Clintons and not knowing the full story. Maybe she's estranged from her toddlers.
It's like
and the
maybe
only way she can connect with them is by mass selling a book.
Maybe they'll see this in a bookstore window. Yeah. No, what happened is she read it. She just made it for them. And she read it to them, but they looked at her and they're like, where's the ISBN number? This is bullshit. Talk to me when you got a two-book deal, baby.
So, yes, in addition to her two little ones, she is also a devoted advocate for greater childhood health care. She's an active and present mom.
They keep having to rephrase how she's a mom.
Is this a DUI trial?
Active mom.
She moms. She does motherhood. She has children.
If your child is alive, you're an active mom. Yeah.
She's an adult. She adults, if you will.
Active shooter, active mom.
Oh, that was for me.
Here is what she is not doing. Still pursuing private business interests while occupying a position in the White House despite not being elected or nominated via any official channels.
Oh, is she talking about someone?
This is subwriting right here.
She's subtweeting right now?
And advising on high-level matters of national security despite zero qualifications for such decision. That type of work is left to other first daughters.
Ooh. Yeah, current first daughter.
Who's she talking about?
As if she wouldn't be doing that exact same thing if Hillary had won.
So seriously, and I'm quoting now, seriously, what has Chelsea done to you? And my answer to that is nothing yet.
Yeah, I mean, this is the whole time travel question. You know, what do you do? If you have the knowledge beforehand, who do you go back and stop? You know who I'm talking about.
No, I think it's a tsunami, though. When you see the sea going out, that's when you run.
Right. You
because
don't wait.
Because by the time it's all gone,
you wait for the wave, you're
fucked.
Crushed. Absolutely.
So, yeah, we don't need to live through the experience of Chelsea losing to, like, an active member of the Lucchese crime family. Or whatever fucking awful, however they're going to eat shit in whatever way. Like, we know this story. We've seen it before. I'm sure she's nice, but she can cook her fucking pancakes in privacy.
Yes, Chelsea Clinton is a public figure. Yes, she's maintained a fairly high profile in recent years. And yes, she dares to have a strong opinion. She is certainly not beyond reproach. And I hope so. Fuck. And she does make a legitimate misstep. It's well and good to call her out, unless everything I just read before you gave the opposite impression of what it was okay to say or comment about what this very public political figure is doing. Let me just reassure you that if she does ever make a misstep, you can call her out.
But in what? She doesn't do anything. She's never done anything. Like, do we call her out for, like, fucking up as a mom or something? Like, she gave her kids vaccines? Like...
Right now, she is merely living her life without either parent in office for the first time since 1982. So maybe it's time to pump the brakes on your breathless Chelsea badgering and let this particular Clinton story simply unfold.
No, thank you.
No.
That's just like, hold up. Just like, be quiet. It'll be over soon.
Yeah.
Let's don't just, struggle. It makes it worse.
Let's just see what this version of Ebola is like. Maybe it's nice.
Maybe this one's airborne and we can get this fucking over with already.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I think that's indicative, that piece there by Marissa Krampus was indicative of... By the way, Marissa Krampus was also known as the author of Can You Be a Zionist and Still Feminist? Yes.
By the way, that's the only way you can be a feminist is if you're a Zionist.
Because Israel is a woman.
It's a working mom. Israel's the working mom of the Middle East.
I mean, I think my reaction to this is... like the reaction to people speculating about this fairly obvious attempt of like Chelsea's new public life post election is like there should be really no better
Man
indication
down.
That she is definitely running for
She's
office.
She's absolutely running for office. We should be running attack ads now. Look at these shitty fucking pancakes. Do you trust this person?
Right, because like the fact that there is this much of an effort now to like nip this in the bud, like any of this sort of like dawning realization that like what is the I think the rational reaction to the idea that anyone associated with the Clintons are trying to claw their way back into public life is just abject horror and fear.
We are all basically Jean-Claude Van Damme and Time Cop right now. We have the machine. We're in place. We need to do our jobs.
It's the scene from H.G. Wells' The Time Machine when he goes too far in the future, except it's just Hillary as sort of like a blob-like creation. I feel great. On the horizon.
So hopefully, I mean, we were speculating about this last night. I'm hoping that Chelsea divorces Mark and marries the other Mark, Mark Zuckerberg. Mark Zuckerberg leaves his wife. Mm. They marry each other, and they run for president, co-president.
Yes.
That is the future.
That's
that I
think... West Wing reboot.
Yeah, so that's the future that I'm hoping for, because, I mean, the show will be fantastic.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
So, yeah, in conclusion, Chelsea Clinton, stop badgering her. Stop thinking, stop asking questions about her role and her family's role and the politics as long as you've been alive in this country. It's been overwhelmingly positive. And if you have any questions or thoughts to the otherwise, you are badgering a 37-year-old woman.
Dehumanize yourselves and face the bloodshed.
That is part one of the Overlook Hotel reading series. All right. We are going now to have a very brief intermission, and we'll be back shortly.
Get yourselves a drink.
Hello. Okay. So, Marky?
Yeah, well.
How do you think the show's going so far?
Not too bad.
Sorry, this is Mark Maron. He's the man that lives in my mouth. How's the show going, Marky?
Not too fucking bad. People seem to like it so much. Anyway, I'd just like to, you know, talk about Stamps.com for a second. If you go to Stamps.com, you can get 15% off on all products. Don't you? I mean, it saves you going to the post office, Willie. So, Willie, who are your guys?
My guys? I'm a precocious 9-year-old clairvoyant. I don't have any guys. I have my mommy and daddy who have brought me here to Littlefields to die this evening.
Yeah, that's a bummer, man. I fucking hate when that happens. Anyway, listen, don't you fucking hate it when you blocked out some time in your day to go to the axe store and you go there and they're all out of axes? Well, listen, if you go to axes.com, you can save 15% now if you use the code ROOM237 on your next trip to axes.com.
Would you care for a whiskey, William?
But I'm only a child. I can't drink.
There are no liquor laws when you're a ghost. I'm a libertarian. Do you know how I'm able to communicate with you without making eye contact? Do you know how I was able to determine which train you took to get to this venue and the average velocity of the subway, even after accounting for rail friction? It's because I have the train. And you have the training, too.
Virgil, are you scared of this place?
At the end of the hallway backstage, there is an elevator, and there is something ominous about it.
Oh my... all week, I've been having this terrifying vision of elevator doors opening and just a cascade of blood spilling out. I think it's supposed to represent the Holocaust or the Federal Reserve or something, but I've been seeing it all week long.
No, it's far, far worse than that. The elevator is an Otis elevator, and it takes 1.7 seconds to travel in between floors.
Oh, man, if this was an efficient ThyssenKrupp elevator, it would only take 1 second at most between floors. Folks, if you want an elevator, go to ThyssenKrupp.com and use the code CHOPPO. You get 15% off your next elevator.
You've got the training, William. Who is your friend?
This is Mark Maron. He's the little man that lives in my mouth and tells me things about, like, about depression and stamps.com. Virgil, Marky tells me that bad things happened here.
It was here that Sam Hyde performed at Rebel Girl. It was in room 237 that the Sad White Boy Blues was recorded. And right where you're standing was the last performance of Come Town.
Oh my God! Willie! Willie, your dad's probably gonna kill you. Willie, this is a live read on the show right now for prophecies and omens.com. Willie, your dad's probably gonna kill you later tonight, but, you know, go to dads.com to get a new dad that won't murder you and your wife and family.
Reporting for duty, we got a 1-9er, 374, 8-back, C-12. We got a haunted hotel that seems to be occupied by ghosts. I'm requesting fire mission, evac, Delta 19 Pronto, Charlie Bravo.
Ooh, Felix, this is the ghost of stolen valor. If you don't heed my warning, something terrible will befall you. Again, I stress I am a ghost.
Ladies, gentlemen, especially ladies, don't worry about this. I was in 5th Special Forces, 45th Ghost Hunting Battalion. I know what I'm doing.
Oh, Felix, the men who have worn that uniform are also ghosts now because of the uniform, and by wearing it, you are disrespecting them.
I don't know if you heard, but I'm not pretending to be in the military. I didn't have anything else to wear to the show.
You just said that you were in the 5th Group Special Forces in Afghanistan.
Not of the U.S. Army. I'm a political activist. I'm part of it's an activist group. It's called the Jared Fogle Liberation Army. And that's what I mean.
You were wearing a U.S. Army uniform, and I must ask the name of your commanding officer!
All right, I didn't want to do this. But I know the four words that will banish any jackbooted thug, whether they're a ghost or not. Am I being detained?
Oh! My ectoplasm! I cannot make a citizen's arrest! My astral projection! Oh!
All right, I'm going to be exiting stage left, but not because I'm afraid. I have women to protect elsewhere.
Okay, welcome to part two of the show. This is where things get even spookier with part two of this very special edition of the Chapo Reading Series. Now, to introduce it, how many of you remember a little book called True Allegiance? Aha, aha. Here is the twist. I am not going to read from True Allegiance, but I'm going to read from a book.
Patience! We'll get back to it.
In the same genre, and by no means anywhere, it's even better than True Allegiance. And I'm going to say, are you familiar with the author of this work of fiction? A little guy by the name of Kurt Schlichter.
He is having sex with his hot wife right now.
Kurt Schlichter, for those of you who aren't aware, is a really spectacular online shithead. So he's a sort of wannabe conservative army man. He's makes a lot out of his time in the JAG Corps during Bosnia in the 90s, I think.
That was the shit, man. Come on.
Felix, how would you describe Kurt?
Kurt is, he got paper cuts for us in Bosnia, fighting for our freedom. And his main thing now is anytime anyone says anything to him, he's like, oh, yeah, well, I'm having sex with my hot wife, which is a regular occurrence for me. But he capitalizes hot wife. And
so
if you're regular like me, you know that hot wife, when it's capitalized, is a term in the cuckolding community.
Anybody who would disparage Kurt's service in the military has clearly never had Bosnian food. It's disgusting.
Now, I brought up True Allegiance because this novel that Kurt's written is very much in the same genre as True Allegiance, in that it's a bit of speculative fiction that seems ripped from the headlines, despite, you know, being a sort of ominous dystopian future. The title of the book is People's Republic, and it takes place in a not-too-distant future in which the United States of America has collapsed and divided in between red and blue states. And the blue states are called the People's Republic, and the red states are like real America. And I want to just read now from Kurt's preface to this book. He says, quote, "This novel is not an eager fantasy of a future that I or any other sane person wants. Keep that in mind, because it is a huge tell that this is exactly what he wants." And indeed, he was writing with one hand the entire time. "Rather, it is a warning. It, or something very like it, could represent America's future if we continue down the path we have embarked upon, and we must reverse that course before it is too late. The key feature of a democratic republic is less that each participant has the capacity to win than each participant has the capacity to lose and accept loss." Again, keep that in mind. "They can lose gracefully because they believe this, they have been heard, that the system is fundamentally fair and not rigged. So when they lose, they accept their loss and continue to press for their preferred candidates and policies through the existing system," which is exactly what Kurt and his friends have been doing for the last decade or so.
Yeah, they would have really responded well if Trump had won the popular vote by 3 million and lost.
So again, this is not at all some kind of weird fantasy reality that Kurt eagerly hopes will happen with every fiber of his being, but is in fact a warning to America. This is a very serious book. This is like, you know, Fahrenheit 451, or Fahrenheit 9/11, for that matter.
It sounds like Orwell's The Animal Farm, 1984. My favorite book.
Now, before I dive into People's Republic by Kurt Schlichter, I do have to read from his acknowledgments. Which, yes. Man, when the book's acknowledgments are funny, you know the book is going to be awesome. So I'm reading now from the acknowledgments. "Many people helped make this novel possible. Not that I'm attempting to shift blame should it turn out to be a raging dumpster fire of jumbled words and stupid ideas. In that case, the fault is entirely my own." This is another tell where if you, you know, charmingly disarm the most obvious criticism of the book by acknowledging it up front, you are immune from its criticism. That is, the fault is entirely my own. To acknowledge the acknowledgments. "Always first is hot wife, Irina Moises." He name checks his hot wife in the acknowledgments to this book.
Always be closing. Always be being cuckolded.
"Hot wife Irina was there from the beginning. Actually, not from the beginning. I would not let her read it at first, but she eventually became the first reader and my primary advisor on whether I was veering entirely off the rails. Without her hard work and support, this book never would have happened. Also, thanks to blah, 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 the amazing Salty Hollywood turned my very basic idea about a cover."
What?
Anyway, and thanks, of course, I want to thank...
Salty Hollywood?
Yeah.
He thanks this... Oh, yeah, she... also, Kelly Jane Aden, again, who joined to proofread the entire manuscript, blah, blah, blah. She is a heck of a writer. Check out her latest book, The Method.
Is that about gay conversion?
And, of course, I want to thank Radio Studs... Larry O'Connor, Tony Katz, Dana Loesch, Hugh Hewitt, Derek Hunter, Ben Shapiro, Cam Edwards.
All those people fucked his wife.
In that order.
You guys did a great job. Ben Shapiro needed a stepladder.
He lists a bunch of other people, you know.
All the heroes of the conservative blogosphere. You got the ethical pedo. You got the backgammon pervert. You got the football dipshit. Age of Consent Ron. All the big guys you know and love from the blog.
He name checks Adam Baldwin here. Felix, that's the character that you're playing. He's actually congratulating Felix for playing Adam Baldwin's character on stage in our live event.
Kurt, our Patreon is actually, we have like 20 subscribers, but the other $55,000 are just all Kurt. He's a big fan of ours.
He continues here. Two gentlemen have since passed on, also inspired me to do this work. One is Andrew Breitbart.
You dead, bitch.
Whose reaction when facing the cultural gatekeepers of the left was never
was to die on the toilet.
Nothing more need be said about the other dead guy. But he closes out the acknowledgments by saying, and of course, I want to thank every single one of my Twitter followers, currently 71,000 plus.
Oh my God.
Ukrainian sex bots, I see you.
I'd like to thank all of my 71,000 Twitter followers for being so very hashtag caring. Kurt Schlichter, name-checking his Twitter followers and the acknowledgments to his book.
Will, was this book self-published?
Yes.
He said someone proofread it. That's not what you'd get at a publishing house, right? You'd get an actual editor.
I don't know what imprint this came out under, whether it was Kurt House, Schlichter Press.
Simon and Schlichter.
Penguin-shaped books.
Okay. Without any further dilly-dallying in the front matter of this book, I'm just going to read from the table of contents now. No. Chapter 1 of People's Republic. This is the Call Me Ishmael moment. The first words in this book are, stop talking.
All right. Good. We're done.
All right. Good night. No. Stop talking. The young man in the passenger seat wisely did as he was told, but he kept loudly breathing in short, shallow puffs.
This is about me.
This is about Felix recording a podcast episode. He was scared, as he should be. Kelly Turnbull, behind the steering wheel, was merely ready, his breathing slow, but deep and steady. Turnbull stretched out the fingers of his right hand, his shooting hand. Ooh. He felt the pressure of the 6th-gen Glock 19 in his belt.
Oh, yeah. 6, that's the best gen. Oh, yeah.
And 19 is the best Glock.
Yeah, it is. 19 is the best Glock. Oh, God, yeah.
He mentally ran through the motions, left hand on the door handle, pushing it open, swinging out his feet as his right hand retrieved the pistol, bringing his hands to the grip, taking aim, and rapidly putting 2 9mm hollow point rounds into the faces of each of the 3 gangbangers, now staring at them from the crosswalk.
Yes!
Oh, my God.
Oh, God.
It sounds like he likes a gangbang.
This is the first paragraph in the book, and there are already hip-hop style thugs who don't know who they're fucking with.
They were the local gang, the Pantsaggers. Their rackets were disrespecting their elders. Saying that word, but getting other people fired for saying it. Even though if you look it up in the dictionary, it just means ignorant person.
The gangsters decided to keep walking. There weren't many cars to jack anymore on the roads outside the secure sectors. But something about this guy told them that the cost-benefit analysis of potentially grabbing a working ride versus dealing with the hard case in the driver's seat was not going to work out in their favor.
I like that they're making like a pro-con list like the Gilmore Girls. Should we jack this car or not? I don't know.
I want to jack the hard case.
They were ready for an uncut night of crime.
Even dirtbags have intuition, and they prudently obeyed theirs.
Wait a minute. Who said stop talking and to who?
Okay, I'll explain. The setup to this scene, I don't want to read every line of it because it's fucking unbearable. But Kelly Turnbull is a former operator. Yeah, Kelly Turnbull. And what he does is that he sneaks into the People's Republic, the blue states, and like shepherds out people like East Germany. So like he's got some bitch ass kid who we'll get to that. But so here he goes. Most of Los Angeles, he's speaking, about the past. Most of Los Angeles was prosperous then, not just the part behind the fences where the rich people now partied while everyone else fought over scraps. That sounds like LA
exactly
just now,
like
actually.
Right now.
Yeah.
Have you been to Skid Row? It's a thing. They literally call it that.
Is this supposed to be...
This is the future.
Yeah, but is this like does he consider Los Angeles blue or red?
It's blue. This is the blue state.
Okay.
On those drives, everyone had a car back then, and you could always find gas. His dad used to listen to talk radio before all radio came under fairness guidelines and morphed into straight up propaganda. Now, I've often remarked on the show that like the single hallmark of this like conservative speculative fiction, and really just all conservative writing in general, be it opinion or journalism, is that their singular inability to let go of even a single grievance or totem or conspiracy theory or anecdote. They're going to throw everything in there, and they're not going to miss any opportunity.
The fucking fairness doctrine.
Yeah, we already are having the fairness doctrine.
Oh my god, that thing that literally was never coming back, and hasn't even come close to ever coming back. Oh my god, I'm so mad.
His dad was 57 years old. You know what else was 57 when Obama said there are 57 states?
Are there 57 states in the People's Republic? Because that would own.
That, yeah. There is not.
Oh.
So it says...
Bush League, Kurt.
And he goes, Turnbull distinctly remembered being right on this very same block listening to KABC radio and hearing about how the country was about to collapse if the big banks didn't get bailed out. That was late 2008, right before Obama was first elected and things really started heading downhill.
You guys remember that.
Turnbull was what then, 12, 13? The description of this like nightmarish dystopia continues. It goes on. Here, graffiti helpfully informed passerby about the local gangs in charge of each little bit of turf. On this block, on this block, it was the Pico Deuce 40s. And up above it all, the billboards cheered the big gang that was in charge of everything, the Blues.
Wait a minute, I thought Blue Lives Mattered. I'm confused.
The people who had been trying to kill Kelly Turnbull since the old United States broke apart. They certainly love their propaganda. One billboard looming over an abandoned coffee shop offered a picture of a bunch of unsmiling, multi-ethnic children with their fists raised into the air. Superimposed across their chests were the words, "Freedom from hate is true freedom. Report hate mongers, deniers, and spies to your People's Bureau of Investigation." In the lower right corner lurked the People's Republic of North America's rainbow flag, or at least... or at least the one version of it. The flag kept changing as one group or another agitated to add its color to the mix or to move its color.
Okay, that part actually is a little realistic.
That's kind of funny.
Yeah.
I would say that overall, Kurt is a better writer than Ben Shapiro, but he believes all the same dumb shit. So it's actually like the descriptions are even funnier. The billboard had to be 6 months old because the flag had changed twice since. This month, the color of the top stripe was orange. Who or what group orange represented Turnbull neither knew or cared.
Protestants. Obviously, Protestants. I have one question, though. Kelly Turnbull, is he a bear of a man?
We have not had that description yet.
How much does he weigh in his underwear?
Rest assured...
Answer slowly.
Rest assured he is over 6 feet tall.
Oh, God, yeah. Cut or uncut?
Turnbull glanced left through his window and observed a long line snaking out of what had been a Ralph supermarket back some 20 years ago. A little Big Lebowski reference for you there. Now it was a people's market with trash blowing across its nearly empty parking lot. The people in the queue looked like something out of an old photo from the Great Depression. Gray, tired, sullen.
Wait, they were literally in black and white? Like, what?
That's how you tell people are sad.
Yeah. The liberals decided that colors were like inequality. They outlawed them. Kurt, this is just the plot to Roger Rabbit. jealous?
Actually, the number of movies that he rips off in this book will be a theme that emerges. The store must have food today, said his passenger. You really don't have food lines in the flyover? He was skinny, like everyone else here who wasn't elite, and maybe 17 years old. The kid of some rich guy back in Kansas City whose wife made off with him to leverage a divorce settlement and who got caught by...
Wow.
Here we go.
Felix, reporting for duty,
here
sir.
Here we go.
Family court commanding officer. It always comes back to my jurisdiction, sir.
A wife made off with him to leverage a divorce settlement and who got caught behind the border when
Jesus Christ.
When the PRNA, that's the name for the California People's Republic, decided to shut it down for good. Daddy was willing to pay Turnbull's price to get him out, an especially hefty one because mommy would certainly raise the alarm, and there's nothing the People's Bureau of Investigation liked better than catching an infiltrator. Don't call it flyover. That's going to be your country soon. It's called the United States of America.
Oh, my God.
After a moment, the kid asked, will I really have to join the army? Only if you want to be a citizen. Now stop talking.
That's Starship Troopers!
He's ripping off Starship Troopers. He's ripping off the book and the movie, Starship Troopers.
No,
no,
he's only
ripping off the
book.
The movie.
No, because in the movie it's a bad thing.
No, he's ripping off the movie because he's never read a fucking book.
Yeah, but in the movie it's a bad thing.
Well,
the fascists are bad.
What do you think it will be
in
this
book? Yeah, but nobody fucking saw it that way, Matt. They don't understand irony.
That's true. Kurt certainly doesn't.
In the first years after the split, there were refugees moving in both directions as people picked a side. But soon, the flow from red to blue became a trickle, and from blue to red, a torrent. As their left-wing policies, freed of conservative obstruction, began to bear the bitter fruit they always did, whenever tried. Determined not to import the same political pathologies that had ripped apart the old United States, Congress, now sitting in Dallas, amended the Constitution.
Hell yeah. Hell yeah. The Congress is shaped like a giant 10-gallon hat.
If you had not been an adult living in the red at the time of the split, and you wanted to vote to be a U.S. citizen, you had to earn the right with a tour in the military carrying a rifle.
Yeah.
There was no alternative to service, no reading stories to juvenile delinquents, no scam make-work gigs for rich kids who didn't want to soil their hands. You put on camo and served, just like a certain author of the book you're reading now. No, sorry, I just created that. And you only got citizenship if you discharged honorably after 2 years, or you got shot sooner. So yeah, Kurt thinks Starship Troopers is like a cool vision of like how a utopian society would be run. Yeah, I'm doing my part.
Where are they fighting that they need this gigantic all-person military?
They're fighting the hippies.
They're fighting the hip-hop style thugs.
Yeah.
And they're constantly getting shot. Like, yeah, you might not. In
the future, No Limit Records is it's actually a country. And we have to fight them.
Here's some more.
The third pants war about pulling up your pants. Many good men gave their lives that day for dressing like a gentleman, not a gangster.
Here's some more just color from this this hellhole. There were plenty of buses, of course. He remarks about how there are no cars anymore and how terrible that is. But he says, there were plenty of buses, wheezing, dirty buses, driven by unionized drivers who answered to no one and ran on their own personal schedules.
Hell yeah. That sounds kind of cool.
Here's some more. Here's some more like propaganda. It says, on the side was a tattered banner depicting an angry woman of ambiguous ethnicity.
The worst kind.
Naturally,
there's me
with her fist in the air, under the words imposed, "Women spelled with a Y will smash sexism, racism, and denial." It was remarkable how a nation so focused on rooting out what it called bigotry under various labels always seemed to uncover more and more of it lurking inside itself.
Got him.
Just a little bit more. His weapons ready to rock if need be. Hopefully there would be no need. Not that shooting blues made much difference to him. His time in Indian country had disabused him of any illusions.
Wait, what?
What?
Yeah.
Wait a minute. What?
Wait.
He calls California, that's Indian country. Oh, this is army slang, if you were, you know.
Oh, I see. The thing where you dehumanize people by referring to them as an ethnic group that we genocided.
Basically, the rich kid who's like a pussy and like doesn't know about real America that he's shepherding out of this nightmare, his cell phone goes off and he's like, I thought I told you to get rid of your fucking cell phone, you idiot. And he said, Kurt says here, trusting a civilian not to be stupid was a bad bet. The kid looked at the caller ID. It's my mom. Don't answer it, Turnbull said. He throws the cell phone out the window because they don't want to be tracked. Why did you do that? The kid asked petulant. It's got my address book. I don't even know my mom's number. I just hit the favorite.
Oh, my God. I don't know if anybody remembers this, but like that's such just a cranky old person thing. I love that. But yeah. I talked about this book that the friend of my that I know of called Devil's Playground, the self-published insane book about the PLO destroying America's energy grid. That's the one where the guy said that the Shia were like the super Muslims, basically. And the guy said like four times in the course of this book when describing how Americans were totally like destroyed by losing electricity, he said over and over again, he said, the only thing Americans at this point knew how to make were reservations.
Ooh.
And he did it like five times. That's so Kurt.
So Kelly Turnbull berates this idiot kid for bringing his cell phone. The kid's eyes welled with tears. Apparently, mommy had never let her magical unicorn child in on the fact that he was a numbskull.
Ooh.
Turnbull,
is that really what you should do?
Yeah.
As a parent, is that a responsibility of an active parent?
Sorry to take away your safe space, son.
Children call children a numbskull every day.
Look, kid, you're a fucking moron. I love you.
Turnbull pitied the kid's drill sergeant, assuming the kid had the stones to volunteer. What's going on here? You know, they're trying to get out of the city. They run into some trouble. He talks about how after the split, of course, guns were outlawed for law-abiding citizen. And now it says, narking out formerly lawful gun owners was a traditional profit center for lowlifes after the split. They got a few bucks, and the gun owners got stuck in the prisons the new government had emptied of the real criminals. So it goes on. You know, there's a whole bit about gas rationing that's interminable. Then they get in trouble with the Blues. These are like the new police officers. It said, the Blues cruiser stopped maybe 20 feet behind them and idled for a moment, but not long enough to run his plates. Both occupants got out, approaching by moving up each side simultaneous in some semblance of the proper tactical template for stopping an unknown driver.
Worthy adversary.
They did not seem afraid or even cautious. They were almost arrogant as they came forward. Turnbull could not get a good look at the one on the passenger side, but in the mirror he could see the neck tats of the one moving up on the side. The PNRA was still hiring the cream of the crop, Turnbull noted.
The only acceptable tattoos for police officers are Fatherland in Fractor across your forearm.
The People's Republic decided that it needed to run the police force centrally and incorporated the local sheriffs and police departments into a national police force originally called the People's Internal Security Squads. When it became obvious that acronym would not work, it became the PSF, the People's Security Force. Did you catch that little joke that Kurt did there?
Hold on. You got a pen? Wait a minute. Say it again. What is it? What are the words? What is it? People's what?
P-I-S-S.
Oh, my God.
Kurt, you devil.
Cops were the key villains in the left's rogues gallery, and most police officers and deputies quickly saw the writing on the wall and left, headed to the red states before the borders closed. That left just a few professionals to address a lot of crime from freed prisoners and the refugees fleeing the welfare reforms in the red states.
Is that, that's a nice word for mass sterilization. Also, so does this mean like literally every cop in America lives in the blue red states now? Like,
yeah.
I'm assuming that means like what do they got to do? Like, there's too many cops now. Do they just all like police each other?
Yeah, they they're just always walking up on each other, like asking the other if they're detaining them.
Am I being detained? Has released like goodbye and hello.
In
the red states. Am I being detained?
Being detained. Okay. Okay.
I'm being detained. Oh. Okay.
Oh, I'm not being detained.
So they get into trouble with these gangster police officers. Turnbull shut his eyes for a moment, ran through his plan, and then opened the door slowly, pushing it all the way out. The cops stepped back a bit, but not far enough. Turnbull stood up to his full 6'3" height.
Yeah. Bear of a man.
Dude.
Bear of a man.
Hell yeah.
There we go, baby. Yeah.
There are no manlets in real America.
Deliberately and smoothly, doing nothing to spook them until his left hand shot back, grabbed the cop's utility belt, and pulled the stunned thug forward and around into the V between the door and the body of the Ford. As Turnbull drove his full weight into the pseudo-cop to pin him, he drew the Glock with his right hand, swung it into the passenger compartment. It roared twice inside the car, the hollow point round streaking over the kid and into the chest of the other pseudo-cop's body armor.
Yeah.
He staggered backward.
Penetrate him.
Turnbull pivoted and brought the pistol out and up under the pinned one's chin.
Yeah.
The pinned one felt it and knew he was screwed, but his self-critique ended a half second later as Turnbull put a round up through his jaw, tongue, and soft palate into his brain.
What that thumb do?
You gotta make sure you get every bit of the skull.
The pseudo-cop sagged and collapsed like a bag of warm, wet meat.
Oh, God.
So,
oh yeah.
So that was that's chapter one.
Did everybody come? Are we all good?
Yeah.
Everybody came?
Are we feeling a bit randy? Okay. I want chapter two I'm gonna be a little bit quicker with, but I'm reading it because now you get in chapter two the view from the other side, the view from the new red United States of America. So Kelly Turnbull is back in the new capital, Dallas. And he says, the city was a living thing, humming, alive with people on the sidewalks and cars filling the streets and freeways. I love that that's like that's the key sign of like if you're living in a free country is just traffic.
Vroom, vroom.
Yeah, I mean, I guess like cars for conservatives are like trains for socialists.
Every car is a cop car. They're all pulling each other over.
Yeah.
No one's getting anywhere.
Yeah. Everyone has bumper stickers. It's like, my son is an operator. My son is a prison guard. My son got put on 2 weeks paid leave for shooting an unarmed suspect. That's the most respected bumper sticker in the red states.
So he says, to the north, the new Capitol complex was gleaming in the sunlight. The new White House lay a mile away at the other end of the mall. This was the nerve center of the United States of America, version 2.0. Turnbull did not feel much more at ease here than on the other side, but then no one was trying to kill him here, so there was that. Still, he openly carried a Kimber 1911 45 for his long trip into town.
That's the best Kimber.
I love the Kimber. Love the Kimber, oh my God.
Security took his phone downstairs, but made no attempt to disarm him.
Fuck yeah.
You don't mess with a man's weapons in the USA. That's how fistfights and civil wars start. What I love about
nothing other than those two things. Fistfight, civil war, nothing in the middle.
What I love about this element here in Kurt's, like, now this is his utopian society, is one in which his stand-in character basically still feels so afraid in the capital city that he needs to carry a gun with him into a fucking office building.
Yeah, it's heaven.
So basically, he goes into this giant office building and meets like the richest man in New America, George V. Ryan, who is looking tall, handsome, and probably 55-ish. And a young man in good shape, probably a recent military, judging by his hair and general demeanor.
Is he a bear of a man?
He looked a little bit like Ryan, probably his son. So this is sort of like
a daddy-dom
thing.
Yeah, he's a cub of a man.
So basically, Turnbull, George Ryan, the richest man in New America, is like, I got a mission for you, Turnbull. You got to go back into the blues and rescue my daughter. And again, this is just ripping off Escape from L.A., point by point, plot point by plot point. And he goes, he's talking about Turnbull's resume here.
I love it when they characters explain to other characters what they did. That's the best.
Yeah.
This is my favorite part. You were part of Operation Megiddo. What was that?
Megiddo.
It's Megiddo. Bible thing.
Yeah, the Bible. You were part of Operation Megiddo. I don't know anything about that, Turnbull said, glancing toward Clay with a frown. That would be classified anyway. I read that the Israelis took out the Iranian nukes all by themselves. Your researchers shouldn't believe everything they read on the internet. Of course, said Ryan, continuing. Now, you grew up in California, so you know it well. After the split, you made a lot of runs back over the line before you left government service. And he's like, no, I don't want to go back. And there's this whole back and forth. He's like, it has to be now. Get my daughter. My daughter Amanda is over there, Mr. Turnbull, in the middle of coming chaos we can barely imagine. How did that happen? She defected. She did not defect, interrupted the young man. She's just confused. Mr. Turnbull, this is my son, George Jr. His twin sister is Amanda. They were close.
George W. Ryan.
Yeah. Then. George chose to do his military service after college, and Amanda went to UT in Austin and then stayed for grad school.
Mistake.
Unfortunately, yeah. Not all of the progressives picked up and headed to the coast after the split. Some stayed here, especially at universities, and they are like a cancer. They spread their lies, and some people like Amanda get taken in. She decided that all this prosperity and freedom is immoral. She believed that the People's Republic was some kind of paradise, so she left. As you know now, we don't keep anyone in. We keep them out. She and some friends crossed over a year ago, and we had no idea what happened until my sources started telling me she was appearing in PR propaganda. So he goes,
that's literally Escape from L.A. This is bullshit.
This is the exact movie from Escape from L.A., yeah. So he goes, you have to take George Jr. with you. He can handle himself. He's a full-blood citizen. Does that line not chill you a little bit?
I'd feel very secure in a country that's talking about blood citizens in both capital letters.
They negotiate a fee to do this, and he says, I'll do it if you pay me $5 million. And he goes, agreed, but there are conditions.
No fiat currency.
Listen to this. You will take
Bitcoin only.
You will take George Jr. with you, and if you did not recover her relatively intact, you forfeit the remaining $4 million.
Hyman, right?
Hyman.
That's what
relatively
he meant.
Relatively intact.
We will be checking the bed sheets.
Relatively intact? Okay. But I have my conditions, too. First, I take Junior here to the range tomorrow and decide whether I'm willing to have him tag along. If I do, Junior understands that the chain of command is me, then him. He does what I say.
I get to fuck her first, and then he fucks his sister.
He does what I say when I say it. And we'll be all good. People's Republic.
I can't wait to hear more.
Yeah, that is the first two chapters of Kurt Schlichter's People's Republic, rounding out the Littlefield special Shining reading series. Okay, we're going to take one more quick break, and we'll be back in 1 second. Hang on. Okay, we are back for the final act of this evening's program. And I just got to say, Marky, what do you think? You think it's time to close out the show? Yeah, man, I'm getting pretty fucking depressed being up here. I'm gonna go talk to my guys. I'll be back.
Stop talking backwards. God damn it. How am I ever going to get this done with this fucking kid and my goddamn wife in my ear like this and this and this? I'm never going to be able to get 100,000 Twitter followers. I'm never going to get a Patreon. I'm never going to be an influencer. I'm never going to be the man who single-handedly ends the Trump administration with a tweet storm. If these people don't shut the fuck up and let me write.
What'll it be, Mr. Crispin?
I'm awfully glad you asked me that, Vlad. Because I'd kill for a white Russian. You can do that for me, can't you, Vlad?
Well, certainly, Mr. Crispin. But aren't you being a bit too hard on your precious co-host?
Podcaster's burden, Vlad. Podcaster's burden. He's a good boy, I suppose.
Yes, he certainly knows a lot about the diesel.
You know, maybe I have been too hard on the boy. I should write him an open letter like I do every year. Let him know how much I care about him. Maybe I'll call it, "Which son are you, Willie?" Can you help me out for a second, Vlad?
Oh, certainly.
You're the best damn bartender from Timbuktu to Red Hook.
Oh. No, your money is no good here. It's fiat.
My dearest Willie, it's springtime, a time that signals renewal and life in all new cultures across the world. In the Christian tradition, this coincides with Easter and the resurrection of Jesus Christ. And in the Jewish faith, it signals the start of allergy season. One thing is sure, no matter what faith one belongs to, the springtime is time for taking stock of one's life and family as we all emerge from the emotional hibernation of the winter months where mommy and I go for weeks without talking to each other. In our family, of course, springtime is also the occasion for my annual open letter to you, where I take stock of both your emerging maturity and obstinate backsliding into wickedness and backtalk. Willie, I must ask, which son are you? Are you the smart and wonderful boy who helps Mama deal with her loneliness and isolation? Or are you the sarcastic butterball taken to talking to his finger whenever Mama tells you to do your chores? Are you the bright and talented philosopher who impressed Mr. Texas with your intense interest in elevators and diesel engines? Or are you a rotten slob who deleted my column about Colin Kaepernick and thug culture in the NFL to make room for your Minecraft game? Is the authentic Willie the sometimes sullen clairvoyant with a seemingly bottomless reserve of grievance and indignation? Or the industrious helper who for the last few days has rolled up his sleeves and good-naturedly pitched in to get the Littlefield venue ready for the long winter season? I recall just the other day when I was attending a party in the Gold Room and I ran into Delbert Grady, the brilliant Boston Globe columnist who previously held my job before the PC witch hunt about who can say certain words robbed him of his job, wife, and two beautiful daughters. After he spilled his drinks all over me, he apologized profusely, and I told him not to worry. This happens every time I go to a party. In any case, he took me to the men's room to wash me and took the opportunity to tell me how you were using your considerable talents to devise new and better ways to pilfer candy from the many locked treat boxes we keep in the topiary maze. Needless to say, this willful behavior shocked me and filled me with anger. Indeed, ever since we came to the little field, the sweet and lively Willie we were so pleased to take all the credit for was abducted by aliens and replaced by a sulky, sarcastic grouch who he didn't recognize. Over the course of the last few months, Mama and I have repeatedly found ourselves wondering, who is Marky and what has they done with our son? Willie, should you be corrected? I thought I had this fatherhood thing down. Years of writing a column about your bedwetting and lack of friends should have prepared me. Should I blame you for attempting to bring an outside party into this situation? Should I give you and your interfering mama a talking to? Or perhaps something a bit more? You are a terrific child, but as splendid as you so often are, Willie, you can also be quite awful. At times, your manner is shockingly disrespectful. Mr. Grady suggested certain measures could be taken to make Mama and you love and respect me the way I deserve. After all, Willie, you snide, candy-thieving brat, it's tough to be punished. But it's much tougher to punish wisely, stronger enough to correct, but gentle enough to do no harm. Do you understand what I mean? Believe me, Willie, one day you will. After all, you've always been here. All work and no play makes Ron love that boy. All work and no play makes Ron love that boy. All work and no play makes Ron love that boy.
guy in the bathroom.
There's a crazy woman in room 237. I tried to silence her, but she blocked me.
Guys, I just saw an Otis elevator. This is getting too creepy. I think we should end the show. I mean, we managed to get out of it without anything really terrible or awful happening to any of us. I'm really glad that we did the show. And like I said, nothing truly murderous or terrible happened to any of us. And we can end the show with a clean conscience.
It's time for some game theory!
Brendan James, everybody! Brendan James! Virgil, Texas! Commander Felix Biederman! Matt Chrisman! Amber Lee Frost! We are Chapo Trap House. I want to thank all you guys for coming out tonight. You were awesome. I want to thank Littlefield, the venue. And once again, the Center for Reproductive Rights. Thanks a lot, guys.